Alright, good afternoon everyone. So we'll be calling this meeting to order. And I will turn it over to Madam President, Ms. Gloria Camacho.
I call the meeting to order? Or you just did?
I just did.
Okay, just checking. So we're gonna ask for your patience with our new protocols. So if I get it wrong, I'll take notes and I promise to be better next time. First, we are going to have Lancey, who will share out the reportable actions from our closed session a little bit earlier.
We also want the change in the agenda. Is there a plan to change this item?
Sure.
3-1?
Yeah.
And set it over here.
Right. Do I do it before or after? Huh? I'm just following the order. So. It's okay. Can we have Michelle Steele lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Will everybody please stand?
Just stand in the order.
Our flag is on this one. And ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so now I know things go in a different order. So we need to make a couple of changes to the agenda.
Right.
We're going to move item 3.1, Innovation and Best Practices, after item 3.4. So we're waiting for that speaker to arrive.
Madam President, if it pleases the board, I'd like to propose two amendments to the agenda. The first would be to pull item 6.3 under action items. The second would be to add a discussion item in section, well, I guess under section 5, or 4 or 5. At the discretion of Madam President.
So does that go in? I guess you can bring it up in section 5.
Yes.
You can bring it up in section 5. Okay. Great.
Okay, so.
Do we have.
Someone make a motion to pull.
To approve the revised agenda?
Okay, so I'll make a motion to propose the revised agenda as amended.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. Okay, go for it now. Okay, Lancey, now we promise we're getting back to you. Report out of the special meeting and with closed session.
Thank you. And so earlier... So earlier today, we had two closed session items. The first one was to approve and implement the point person scheme proposed CFAD allocations reflecting the LARIC funding allocations for school year 2018 and 2019. And that motion was passed. And then the second item was a review of the details and approval on the recommendations for to submit a proposed report to the state auditor's office on the recommendations that were submitted to LARIC from an audit stemming on a Montebello audit that took place, which report was published on November 2nd. And that was also approved. We will have the opportunity to go over those items during the opening agenda so that everybody is familiar with what was approved.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from March 2018?
I will.
All in favor? Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, sorry.
He said point of order. Whenever there's a second, you should ask for any discussion first.
Okay.
And then after that, you can call the question that everybody wants to discuss.
Perfect. Thank you, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's just try that one more. Sorry, we're going to practice that one more time. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I make motion to approve minutes.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion carried. Did I do it right, Bob?
Actually, all in favor? Aye. Any opposed? No.
Okay.
Any abstentions?
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. He's got the most experience, so we're going to depend on him.
Most gray hair.
Oh, I'm just hiding mine really well right now. That's all. So now we have public comment. Do we have any?
Okay, so anyone may offer a public comment to the board. If you'd like a speaker form, they're available in the back of the room. You can just fill it out and give it to me. Each speaker will be given 3 minutes. A maximum of 10 speakers will be permitted. We have one speaker so far. Does anyone else have a form they want to submit? Okay, so we'll now hear from speaker number one.
So, I'm Melissa McKelly from the Los Angeles Public Library, and I'm actually speaking on behalf of Kelly Tyler. She's the senior librarian, or the managing librarian for our adult literacy program. And she just wanted me to mention that these are her words exactly. We are pleased to announce that our staff has completed the first phase of our pilot with LAUSD's Family Success Initiative. So we worked with 9 of our libraries, and we're able to have the children, and we're just in the process of scheduling the buses for them to actually get the visits to the branches. But she just wanted to say that our librarians and literacy coordinators have been so valuable, or invaluable, I guess, at implementing this and the success to the local libraries in the program, and just that we're looking forward to a second phase of the pilot and, continuing to working together. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going, as we've moved item 3.1 down, the next item on the agenda is 3.2, and I'd like to introduce Mon Lee and Grace Ocampo.
Good afternoon, executive team.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We have a new team member who will be co-presenting with me today. We are beyond thrilled and elated that she's part of our team, and I am extremely relieved. I would like to introduce Grace Ocampo, Lyric Financial Analyst. She'll be sharing a little bit about herself and the Lyric project she's currently working on.
Good afternoon. My name is Grace Ocampo. I'm the newly hired financial analyst for the Lyric office. Just to give you a brief background about myself, I have been with the Los Angeles Unified School District for the past 15 years in various capacities. And the bulk of my experience includes analysis of different budgets and expenditures within the LAUSD district. And that includes different programs such as WIA, Perkins, CalWORKs, teacher incentive fund and other grants. Right now we had just finished consolidating the quarter two progress reports, and I'm currently working on getting an understanding of the adult ed block grant program and its reporting requirements.
Thank you.
So what we have here on the screen is the second quarter progress report that we had consolidated from the different districts. And on the next slide, we have here a summary. For quarter two, we have a total of $147 million that includes the carryover and plus the current allocations. Out of that amount, we had already expended about $60 million, or about 41% of the budget, and we have a balance of $87.6 million as of December 31.
Same slide.
Next slide, please.
This is the ABG quarterly reporting deadlines and rules. I just wanted to remind you that the third quarter expense and progress report and budget revision are due on June 1st and consortium to certify by June 30th. Please remember to include the narrative page. The third quarter spending target, so if you were to look all the way to the all the way to the right, the spending targets, the third quarter spending target for each member district is 45% of carryover and new funds. And the fourth quarter spending target for each member district is 60% of carryover and new funds. Next slide, please. This is LARIC's 2018-19 and 2019-20 AABG preliminary allocation schedule with COLA. The 2018-19 base funding is $121 million, with an additional $5 million from COLA, totaling $126 million. And the 2019-20 AABG preliminary funding is $126 million. And I just wanted to remind everybody that the estimated time frame for the completion of the NOVA system is sometime in June. So that's when we're going to try to make for our Arcadia, but it's not 100% sure yet. We're hoping it's going to happen. Yeah, sometimes. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Just wanted to know, in terms of spending targets for the consortium, overall, not necessarily going into detail for each district, are we on track in terms of meeting our spending target?
And I will defer that question to Mr. Asturias.
Most of the districts are on track. There are some that are not, and that is something that we will be pointing out during Q3. This requirement was just unveiled on all of us about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that you were aware of those requirements, but you know, we didn't really focus on that information because they were given to us after Q2 was completed. So as we go into Q3, then we wanted for everybody to be aware that, you know, 45% is our spending target, and then we will provide with an accounting as to where every district is at our next meeting.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, obviously, it's kind of stating the obvious, but it would be recommended, obviously, for each of the districts to kind of review their expenditures so far, kind of see where they're lining up in terms of that expectation from the state.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Madam President.
Sorry. May I?
Mr. Oot.
Okay. So first of all, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Studios, because you are the workhorse and the one who keeps us all together here. So my follow-up question to what Mr. Stark had is, I'm a little slow, so I want to be real specific. These targets of the 45 and 60%, this is the first time I've seen this, and I don't recall Neil Kelly and his traveling roadshow ever pointing these percentages out. This is what you refer to as something that came out new to us, what, a couple of months ago? Or?
That is correct. My understanding is that these new requirements were released with the budget language that included the COLA and the new allocation amount for next year. We are still waiting for the May revise to see if there's any additional requirements that will be included in there. But clearly, the 45% and the 60% were part of the January information language included with the budget, with the proposed budget.
Dr. Miller? Oh,
I was just going to follow up. Is this the legislature that proposed this?
I would
establish these percentages.
I would assume that that is the case, since it came out with the language that accompanied the budget from the governor.
Okay, thank you,
Dr. Miller.
So, first of all, I echo what my colleagues are saying here about Landy and the staff's work, and congratulations and greatest welcome. And I know we've got at least two other staff members that will introduce, new staff members will introduce later, and that'll be great. But on this particular topic, though, in LATCD, we are the recipient of strong workforce dollars and AEBG dollars and all, many other categorical funds. And we found that the... that you can spend these funds over a 2 to 3 year period. So what we're trying to do now is track the carryover separate from the new allocation so that we can keep track of what dollars need to be spent when and in what order. Because even though you get funding, for example, in 17-18, you have multiple years in which to expend all of those dollars. So I think what I'm wondering here and asking is if staff could take a look at how they might be able to report this information out so we can see if it's broken out as current year dollars, prior year dollars, and when we have to have the prior year dollars allocated so that we can keep track of that. Because in terms of the way in which districts allocate dollars, they may not be able to allocate them all in any given year for whatever reason, or if they do have dollars to allocate, they want to make sure they allocate those dollars that they received maybe a year or two earlier, make sure that they send everything out. So I don't know if I'm making myself real clear here, but I think you catch my drift.
So do I understand that we have a directive for staff to do something?
If the board so pleases, I have a suggestion for staff to look into that and to see if they can segregate the dollars in that way so that all of us as individual districts are aware of the timing that we have. And I think we try to track it anyway in LACCD as an individual. Adrian Ann, is that correct?
Yes.
But I think it might be helpful to all of us to, and certainly as a board member, it would be helpful for me to kind of see how the monies are being expended over a series of years. Because now we're in, what, this is our third year of funding?
That is correct.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I'd also like to support what Dr. Miller is saying. And of course, given the fact that it's a rather large consortium, in fact, the biggest from the state, you know, so we get a large portion of the AEBG funds, and we obviously want to send the message that we not only need those funds, but we need more, and how part of how we prove that is making sure that we're spending down the allocation. And I know, you know, for the K-12 districts, that's pretty much our bread and butter in terms of our funding, so I would support what Dr. Miller is saying in terms of maybe doing a little bit of a deeper dive and analysis on that issue.
Any other comments?
No, thank you.
Carrie Froge was unable to be with us today, but in her place, Elvis Carias from Culver City Unified will be sharing the report on a joint professional development conducted in the fall.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm disappointed my own administrator couldn't pronounce my name correctly. I'm going to talk about that a little later. So good afternoon. So this report is from Carrie Froge, from Point Person from Montebello. It's regarding the professional development that's part of LARIC, the COP and the PLCs. these native practice and facilities. The next slide, please. So she wrote this. Maybe I'm going to go ahead and read it. So as Erlich said, we did three trainings. The focus was on community of practice and professional learning communities. The dates are on there. Part of Larry, I believe it was here at East LA, if I'm not mistaken, the actual physical place. Okay, so then we have breakout sessions. So the goal of the training is to provide framework and knowledge needed to develop and sustain a collaborative process for improving practice, focusing on the student learning outcomes. The training consisted of group sessions focused on collaborative practices used in both COPs and PLCs. Breakout activities delve deeper into strategies and tools needed for working within COPs with LARIC participants and PLCs for LUSD CTE advisors. In both whole group and breakout sessions, participants engage in interactive activities, design a model, and apply the content and skills learned to support the work of participants. This is just an overview as far as attendance was concerned. The breakout, like I said, it was three sessions. The breakout is broken down into programs, ESL, CTE, ABE, AAC. So the totals are there on the far right, three sessions. So I think we kept a constant total enrollment, so that's good.
I have a question about that slide.
Yeah. I'll do my best.
Sorry. So on the left-hand side, total attended combines the PLC and the COP.
That's correct.
So the total is on the left, and then, okay.
Yes, so the all total, right. Yeah, correct. The total on the right is the PLC, and the total on the left is everything combined.
Thanks.
This is broken down by district, so Burbank, Culver City, LECCD, LEUSD, and Montebello. Just keep in mind that LEUSD had their CTE community PLC included in that number. I just want to make a correction for our particular district. We had six people attend at least session one. I'm not sure about the follow-up part, so maybe they fell on the right-hand side in the unknown district for whatever reason. Yes.
Dr. Miller?
Sorry. Thank you. So obviously, and we know LAUSD is the big, you know, dog in what correction looking for, the big dog in the race or whatever. But the attendance by LACCD, for example, is atrocious, and the rest of us aren't really doing no good either. So I'm curious as to what is it from a marketing, professional development, whatever we need to do to try to increase participation.
So,
Adrienne.
Well, these were scheduled midweek when our faculty are teaching, so on a Friday when we have non-teaching dates, so that was
part of the issue.
That was our participation issue.
Okay.
I can't pull that many people out of class.
Okay. So, and I didn't mean to pick on us. It's part of my job to pick on us, so I did that. But so in general, though, did we do some kind of evaluation or can we about why the attendance seems low for across the board? That's my concern.
Thank you for your question, Dr. Wheeler. We have not conducted a specific evaluation as to why the attendance was as it were, if you will, but we certainly will do that, and we will report to the board at a later date.
Yeah, so I agree 100%. And, you know, it's kind of clear just with the recent discussion that, you know, if we're going to schedule it during the week, obviously that doesn't work maybe for a district or two or others. So we shouldn't be finding out about that now. It should be, obviously, these are questions that should be asked well ahead of time so that we do get more participation from all the districts as it's a LARIC initiative. So I just want to echo my colleagues on that piece.
Okay, any other comments?
Are there any comments about the outcomes, the quality, and do we have any input on how well it went? Did people enjoy it? Did they learn anything from it? Was there any evaluation done on it?
Absolutely. We do have a full report that was made available by the American Institute of Research, and we'll be happy to provide you with copies of it if you like to. If you like, but in general, the training was well received and very well appreciated, particularly by those that were able to attend all three sessions of them.
Yeah, that's good enough for me. As long as
I would like if you can email me the report, because it's not huge, is it? First, tell me if it's big.
It's about 20 pages.
Oh, okay.
It's very detailed.
Yeah. Just, okay.
Sure. Good information.
Anybody else want it?
Sure. Just absolutely. Yeah.
Joe.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I'd like to introduce Deanne Susino from Montebello, who will provide a summary of activities on Ledge Day.
Good afternoon. I am Deanne Cicino. I am the current president of the Montebello chapter of CCAE, and I'm here to take Carrie's place that couldn't be here today. So I'm going to try to tell you about Ledge Day very quickly in three or four slides. The first day, and the next slide. Something new this year. Those are actually four of the students that Montebello was able to bring. This is the first year they had a rally, and it was really great. It was in front of the Capitol the first day, and a senator from the Sacramento area came out and spoke to us about his senior year in high school when he discovered he didn't have enough credits to graduate. Mm. He said he was just horrified. The worst part was talking to his parents. He had to have two conversations because they were divorced. He said that was the worst part. Everybody was very upset. But once he turned 18, he redeemed himself, and he enrolled in Sacramento. I don't know if it was Sacramento Adult School or an adult school in Sacramento. And he got his high school diploma. So that was a great way to start. And just kick off of Ledge, it was really great week by Ledge Day. Do the next slide. Actually, I think it's two slides down. Well, that's a picture of the rally. We'll go back to that in a moment. So the next day was all about the meetings, and we had three specific asks this year. The first ask was to remove or eliminate the word grant, block grant. Sounds very temporary, could potentially be a hindrance to forming long-term relationships and partnerships that we're all trying very hard to, you know, create at this point. The next one was to create and implement an immigration metric into the plan. We serve so many immigrants that we want that to be a measurable outcome. And the last one was money. From what I understand, we are supposed to be getting $550 million, I believe, next year, and we're asking for that to increase by $110 million. And we had a lot of input. We had a lot of questions about that specifically. What will you do with the money? And we explained, and they wanted very specific examples, and we were all able to give them very, very specific examples. One of them, just for an example, was culinary arts, talked about new equipment. We spoke about having a driving course for a license for a truck, but, you know, it took another budget cycle to be able to buy a truck. Things like that. We want to be able to grow and expand and enhance our programs on demand. So the last part, so you can go back and join the fire, was the students. The most important part that day really was the students. We had zero downtime for the first 2 days, but because of some plane delays and travel delays, we had a lot of downtime at the airport. But it was good because we had an opportunity to really have conversations with the students, not just surface conversations. And the word that kept coming up over and over and over was empowered. Mm-hmm. They felt so powerful and validated and heard and respected. And I had four meetings that day, and we tried to stay out of the way about 75% of the time and let the students do what they're saying, because that's what had the most impact. And it was great to see our students, like, step up and learn, you know, all the things they learned. We talk about community involvement. We talk about saying yes and stepping up to opportunities, and they did that. So I just want to leave you briefly with a couple of comments from students, because I think they can say it best. My participation in Ledge Day was a gratifying experience because I put my 2 cents to support adult education. I think that a right that's not defended is a right that is lost. I had the opportunity to test what I learned in English with people who I never thought of meeting by breaking barriers of insecurity. And the last one,
as someone who's about to graduate from high school. Both of these young ladies are about to graduate this year, which we're very excited about. I met many fine people, and one of them was Ed Chow, the assembly member from 49th District. I actually got emotional and tears knowing how much he and his staff supported me for pursuing my goal of earning my diploma. So they felt validated and empowered, and it was really, really great. And I'm hopeful that I can keep myself. Maybe my boss will let me go next year. I don't know. We'll have to see how that goes. But it was great, and we probably had about 200 people. And this is my third time going, and I would say this is probably the one that I would think would be the most impactful because of the rally and just because of the conversations that we had. So, any questions?
Well, first I want to acknowledge you and Montebello really for their consistent and ongoing advocacy efforts. Always, always, Montebello is leading that. And keeping adult ed in the forefront of the minds of policymakers. And you guys do a really good job of informing the rest of us about some of the actions that you guys take, even though you're not the biggest district in the planet or the smallest district, and you constantly push that. And also really for taking students there. I wasn't able to do that this year, and I know just looking at the faces and you know, policymakers are used to hearing from educators, and they think that it's about our jobs, right? But when they hear from students, they know the real reason why we do what we do. And so having students be there and advocating for adult ed, there's no more powerful thing. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, just a comment, a few comments. We'll put in a good word for you with Dan. Make sure we get you up there again. Thanks so much for, again, bringing the students. I think that's a great opportunity. They do say it best, and it really does resonate, I think, in a much more impactful way with legislators. Just really a couple comments on, you know, I think CCAE is a great organization. You know, in terms of legislative priorities, you know, I brought it up before. I don't know to what degree CCAE really represents LERIC in terms of whatever our legislative priorities might be, but I would like to kind of encourage us to maybe in future cycles identify what some of those priorities are, because I know, like, CCAE, for example, again, great organization doing wonderful things, but I don't know to what degree they represent, for example, you know, what the community college interests might be with regard to adult ed legislation, for example. And I think, you know, what we want to do in LA as much as possible, given our role and our, you know, responsibility overseeing a large chunk of the money that's going out, is to really look at how can we, in a much deeper and substantive way, partner with the community college efforts around legislative efforts so that we don't sort of continue the status quo of a bifurcated approach where community college asking for one thing, adult ed asking for something else, as if we're sort of competing with one another. I think the more we can integrate our efforts and really kind of be singing out of the same script with regard to this, I think that's something I would like to see more of in the future. Not directing any staff at this point, but I may in the future, I don't know. Just some comments.
Dr. Miller?
So I echo my colleague's comments about the need for us to be more engaged. I just want to thank Montebello and you in particular for this, and there are the legislators really don't want to listen to hear from anything other than students normally. But I would like to suggest that for a future meeting, we agendize the possibility of establishing a board subcommittee for legislative and public affairs. Mm. That, let's see, there's five of us, I guess, so that two members might be appointed to this committee to develop a recommended legislative policy agenda, so that next year, when we get into the budget cycle, budget season, and the legislative cycle, we would be in a position to either sponsor bills ourselves or to work in association with the state associations on things that are important to our consortium in the Southern California area.
We do have a lobbyist full-time that works for CCAE, also rep of state, Dawn
Kepke.
And she's done a phenomenal job. One small step toward, I think, what you're referencing is just our chapter meetings. We have a Larry session. We always have somebody there reporting on what LIRC is doing so that we can try to see any time we can be of assistance and help as far as Montebello will try to do it.
Thank you. Dan?
Dan, great job. Yourself and Carrie did a phenomenal job. In regards to the students, what we do, we don't have big students. They actually do an essay writing contest. Mm-hmm. And then from the essay writing contest, we personally interview them. After we interview them, then we pick our top three or top four students that we do give them basically a scholarship to attend from the local CCA chapter, and they pay for all their accommodations for them to go. On the flight, hotel accommodation, meal money, the whole nine yards. So it's a great incentive for them, and we've really seen, like I said, how proud they are of being part of this day, and it's a really nice thing to do. I've gone to numerous ledge days, walked the halls numerous times as being a former CAIA president and also a local chapter member, and the empowerment of the students is the biggest thing we could advocate for by far. I challenge everybody, not so much to have to go to Sacramento itself, but we could do it here locally. And I think Mr. Stark and Mr. Miller are on the same page in regards to us working together as a consortium and really advocating for LIRC. I think we have to also look at a marketing campaign about LIRC. I've heard through the northern section, they have... on buses, they have their consortium on buses, billboard buses, and in regards to what their consortium's all about, you know, the phone number, where to contact, try to draw enrollment for their students and for their school sites. So I'm just looking at a total picture in regards to what we can continue to advocate just as a whole. But once again, the students are, they're the voice by far. That's why we're here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments? Thank you.
Thank you,
Dan. I'm checking to see if our 3.1 speaker is here yet.
I was just informed that unfortunately she's not going to make it until about 45 minutes from now,
Okay.
So I respectfully request that if at all possible, maybe we can accommodate her at the end of the meeting, if that were possible.
It's okay with me.
All right with that.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you.
Perfect. So the next section of the agenda is the information items. We'll start with Yanita Chavez from Burbank Unified, who will give us an update on the reactivation of the subject matter experts. See, I can't speak, Elvis, is why I can't say your name.
Right. And if it pleases the board, Dr. Adrienne Mullen has requested to be added to the informative, to the update that Ms. Chavez will be providing.
Absolutely.
Good afternoon. As we've been mentioning for the last 3 months, we're working very hard on having our subject matter expert work group get together. And they started meeting last week. Last week, counseling department had their first meeting. This week, we had the ESL and ASC. Unfortunately, the AGE program are not going to be doing anything for now. And so we will be waiting until the fall. We reached out, as you suggested last time, but we were not successful.
Okay.
So we are going to reactivate them during the fall. And for the CTE, Dr. Mullen will provide some information.
So with CTE, we're looking at, I'm going to have a meeting with the CTE group to explain this articulation concept that we came up with as our goal. This was developed with Anna Martinez. I'm looking at really, it developed from last year when I went to the CTE meeting, and they wanted to have 5 articulations across our district from the adult schools in 3 weeks. I'm like, whoa, that's not going to happen. So we looked at a different approach. So our original goal was to have articulation meetings to explain the process in each of the regions. That has morphed, and now we're doing one-on-one. So we started last week with West LA College and Venice Adult School. So we had Venice Adult School bring programs that they would like to articulate into West LA College. We brought the appropriate stakeholders to the table, the vice president, the dean, faculty members. Venice Adult School did the same thing. They brought the principal, the assistant principal, counselor, faculty members in those departments. So now we've created a group. We've started the dialogue. Because the way articulation has to work is we're articulating from the adult school to the college. We have to align coursework. We have to look at what the outcomes of that class are, and is that outcome the entry point to the next class that we have at our campus? If yes, that's beautiful. If no, what class did we create to fill the gap? I think that will be more meaningful work at the local level, and I've shared that oftentimes, I know, in a point person's team meeting, that we'll move this better, you know, adult school to community college, because it's in both of the entities' best interest. We cannot move articulation at a global level. It is a local level movement. So we're starting with LUSD last week with Venice Adult School in West LA. I've shared with the dean of adult education in my district that they're to help shepherd these meetings through this morning before I came here. I met with the CIOs and the CSSOs, which are the vice presidents of instruction and student services, shared that this is also a goal. So we're pulling together the stakeholders on our side. I've also reached out to LUSD with Mr. Stark, to come and talk to the principals about this concept of how articulation works, because it's a shared governance process in our district. So we need to bring the right players to the table and have them facilitate a conversation. So I'm moving it on my side, and I'll reach out to the LHD I started with. Of course, we're going to roll this to the other districts, Montebello, Culver City, and Burbank as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, just want to make a comment. Yeah, just thank Dr. Mullen for her leadership in this area and really kind of helping at least LAUSD kind of get our heads around how we can better connect with the colleges on this effort, because we know that with our principals and our school sites, this is really an exciting area for us in terms of articulating CTE pathways and programs. We heard some great feedback from our Venice folks. Really excited about possibilities there. Obviously, West has is, I believe, the only community college actually that can award a bachelor's degree in, is it dental?
Okay. Dental hygienist. It's the only one in our district. There's 15 currently across the state, but it's only one in our district.
So we're very excited, because Venice does actually have a dental program, and so if there's a way that we can build that pathway, you know, adult ed, you know, to community college, eventually leading to a four-year degree. I mean, I think that would be sort of like the holy grail of articulation. So very excited about that. And we have another project we're working on with Trade Tech for the Powerline program, which is coming from East LA Skills. So just appreciate Adrian Ann kind of helping to shepherd this process. So thank you.
And we're really focusing on CTE pathways. We know there are other program areas, but that's really the area that we're focused on, is how to articulate the CTE pathways into the college. Or if you don't have a CTE program, you know, what skill sets can we package in your program that will be an entry point into a CTE program? That was just for you.
Just for us. Thank you so much.
Do you want to talk at all about the timing and how long it takes us to get curriculum approved through our process?
Right. So curriculum, because it goes through a shared governance process at the local campus level and then at the district level, and then it goes to the state. It takes about a year to get curriculum through our process. So when we're looking at these, we're looking at them. This is what I've encouraged the dean to do. Let's not create new curriculum unless we absolutely have to. Let's look at what we already have in play that will fill that need. It may not be a class for class articulation. What we talked about at West was doing a block. So your three classes may equal our two classes, you know, or your three classes may be, you know, you enter at class two versus class one into a program. So it's, you know, I think that is really important for everyone to understand that it's not necessarily class for class. Mm-hmm. The last thing I want to do, really honestly, is build curriculum. I want to use what we already have in play, because if we build curriculum, we stop the train. And my goal is to keep the train moving down the track. because, you know, one of our outcomes eventually, we know in this grant, is going to be completions for both of us. So if we complete all adult school, we transition into the community college, and then complete again, that's a double win for all of us. So that's what I'm really trying to move towards.
Thank you.
Choo-choo.
I'm
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we are so excited about the next item on the agenda for ourselves as well as for you, Lancey. So you're going to tell us what's going on with the staff.
Absolutely. First of all, I would like to thank the board for finally approving and allowing us to move forward with the hiring of additional staff. A lot of the improvements that we've made from last meeting to this meeting actually are thanks to the fact that we have additional staff to help us out with putting all of that together. It's quite an endeavor. And so I would like to call in the new staff. But before I do, I want to just give a special shout-out to both our previously existing staff, Diana Matsustenda, Ms. Diana Matsumoto and Mon Le. They have been instrumental in welcoming and helping our newer staff to adapt and to be as productive and as efficient as they themselves are. So thank you, ladies. And if I may call in, what I'm going to do, there's four of them. One of them already got introduced. That was Grace Ocampo.
You could do it again.
So I'm going to ask Grace to join us up here and everybody else as well. So Michelle Steele, please join us over here. For Justin Gorin, please join us. And last but not least, Rochelle Martinez. And I'm going to ask them to tell you a little bit about themselves and what they're working on currently. Okay. We're going to spare Grace from doing it twice.
I forgot already, Grace. I forgot. Just kidding.
Unless she's aching to do it again.
Good afternoon. My name is Rochelle Martinez. I am the new senior office tech for the LIARC office. I've been with LA Unified for 4 years. And prior to working in the LIARC office, I worked as a principal clerk in a provisionary assignment with HR and also as a senior office tech at East LA Occupational. Currently, I have been tasked with a major project. I am in charge of filing, cataloging, and archiving the historical data for the LIARC office.
That's a lot. You've got a big job in front of you, Michelle. Yes. Welcome. Okay. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Michelle Steele, and I've worked for LA Unified School District for the last 17 years, and for the last 4 years at Culver City as well. And I've worked as a teacher advisor, an outreach consultant, a grant coordinator, and then also as a subject matter expert work group member for ASC. And then 3 weeks as a LIARC advisor. this is the last day of my third week, and it's been really awesome working with Deanna and Lancey and Mon. They've been excellent at making us all, you know, feel at home, and it's a great team. It's like we're meant to be together. And my job that I'm in charge of is, number one, understanding the Brown Act and Robert's Rules, and trying to figure out what support I can provide the whole team and making sure that we maintain compliance with all of that. So that's been lots of fun for me. And then I'm also charged with staying abreast of all current adult education legislation, AB legislation, so I can provide summaries and recommendations to y'all. And then
we have a new good staff person to our subcommittee.
Right. Subcommittee too.
And
right
then also working with Deanna to help support the SME groups. And then working with Justin on a very small job, which is analyzing our 3-year plan and figuring out exactly what we've accomplished and where we're going.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
My name is Justin Gorenz, and in addition to my camera skills, I don't know if you noticed our new technology, I'm really not watching a game on this. I have a footprint with our consortium members with LAUSD as well as LACCD. With LAUSD, I've been an ESL teacher advisor, academic teacher advisor. I was a WIOA teacher advisor as well. Most recently with LAUSD, I've been working on the Family Success Initiative, writing curriculum for that. I was the point person for the IET program at Abram Friedman Occupational Center. With LACCD, I'm an ESL teacher, but I have an additional assignment. I'm working writing curriculum for our EL Civics program. Currently, I'm working on our 243 program plan with Angelica Ramirez, our dean, and probably something else that I'm forgetting right now. And with LARIC, I've been tasked with several things. One, we're looking at our website very carefully, revamping it, putting new content together, trying to make it a little bit more interactive and dynamic, as well as taking a look at all of the pilot programs that were put together in the past year, analyzing them, summarizing them, creating a rubric so that we can have an objective measure of what was successful, what wasn't, so we can make some recommendations to you to take a look at and decide what worked, what didn't work, and as well as what Michelle referenced in terms of the three-year plan. And I have to echo what Michelle said as well. It's been a wonderful couple of weeks for me. It just feels like Deanna and Mon were so welcoming. Monzi's been awesome. Rarely have I entered a new realm with a really clear understanding what the expectations were, understanding what the vision was for the future, and understanding that what we're doing is not only important, but the way to get to that end together. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. Woohoo! I'm so excited for you. Let's take a stab at it.
Once again, I feel very lucky to have, such qualified and outstanding team. So, again, thank you to the executive board for allowing these to take place.
Yeah, just a couple comments. So first, if you noticed a really big smile on Lanzi's face, that's why. So congratulations, Lanzi, and all the new team members. Just want to thank colleagues on the board for participating in, I think, a very positive selection process, where I think we really did get the best of the bunch in terms of the applicants who applied, and we had great participation on the interview panel, very collaborative panel. So I just want to thank my colleagues who participated in that process, because I think in the end we really did get a fine group of individuals to help us move forward as a consortium. So again, congratulations to all the new hires.
Anybody else? And now you can breathe a little bit.
Absolutely. And last but not least on the same topic, in the packet is included a job description and general description of what the duties of the specific positions are. The LARIC office serves at the pleasure of the board, and we are here to further whatever tasks you would like us to push through. And we're ready, willing, and able.
So I just have to, if I may, just add, I think this is fabulous. I feel very encouraged about our future. I think we've got a great new team of people that these folks, plus our point people, are really the engines that will drive this whole thing, and this is very, very exciting and very encouraging.
Ditto. Okay. Thank you, Lancey. So now, let me try it again. I get to try his name one more time. Elvis, say it for me first. Say it. Garias. It's where I want to put Carias.
Second syllable.
Second syllable. I would know.
He'll
share the overview of the student panels from the LARIC conference.
So I was tasked to giving you sort of a summary of the student panel. So the student panel occurred during the LARIC conference. I'm sure everyone attended. Yes? Okay. It was broken down to three parts between one panel was ESL,
the other one with CTE, and the other one with the combination of ABE. So again, as part of the purpose of this is to obtain feedback from our students as part of our regional plan to tailor our program to the needs of the community. So the questions were around educational and career goals, common challenges, successes, classes they'd like to see. So what I did was I just realized how small that looks. So must have been the font I was using. Can everyone see?
It looks like you're writing. Little font.
So I'm just going to go ahead over some of these items. So these are sort of the things that kind of stuck out. So for ESL, oh yeah, you guys all have it on your notebooks. So language learning was a common success. So a lot of them felt really positive about learning the language, you know, to help them with their confidence, with their self-esteem. They feel that there are more opportunities that are available for them as well. And they would like to see more career-oriented classes. CTE, on the left-hand side, the green bubble, barriers were language as well as time restraints. Some successes have been employment gains, such as completing a short-term CTE or passing an occupational test in the school has always been encouraging, so that's a positive. ABAAC successes include advocacy. So I don't know if that was said by the bell, I can't remember, but something about going to Sacramento, so it may have been. And transitioning into college. School supports has been teacher mentorship, peer-to-peer support, and counseling, so all those are positive. Outcomes varied as in language and the change of routine. Now, I kind of did a modified Venn diagram because I think there was a lot of common theme around all of their what they were saying. So I did a couple of hashtags there just because I thought those were kind of, and since I'm 25 years old, I thought those were very important that we figured out. So just look at the advertising. One of the things that kind of stuck out for me, everyone said we should do flyers, brochures. Somebody was really creative. I think it was CTE. They said something about commercials or do some kind of marketing and social media. So I think that's kind of one of our weaknesses. Outreach and guest speakers. So those are just ideas. I think one of the students that I recall said something about having a commercial before a YouTube video, something of the nature. Since everyone's watching YouTube videos, right? I've seen many sick and watched some YouTube videos. That works. I'm just kidding. That's a joke. All right, so as far as goals were concerned, they're all career-oriented, so that's good. I just wanted to go ahead and put that up there just to make sure it's not clear. So.
I do have a question regarding CTE and time restraints. Do you have any more to share on that? Are we talking about the length of the courses? Are we talking about their ability to access the courses, transportation issues? What is that referring to?
So this particular question referred to some of your common challenges. It wasn't referring to the length of the course. It was referring to the students' individual schedules as far as getting to school and trying to finish the whole thing along with their other personal responsibilities.
That was a question in regards to marketing. How did that come up, and what exactly are they looking for from the consortium about marketing?
There was a question specifically about that. Let's see. I can't remember what the exact question was. Does anybody remember who participated in the panel? Yeah, it was a CT, yes, but what I'm saying is that there was a question of how we could...
How can we get it out to the...
How do we get the information about what we offer to more people?
Correct. So they all kind of voiced different things. But yeah, the CT in person was about the YouTube video. But they all voiced that we need to do a lot more marketing. We need to get out there. Brochures, flyers, or something, whether it's English or Spanish. But we just need to do a lot more. That was my sense.
So, Lance, question. Who in our new group is going to be in charge of helping us out with marketing?
I see them anxiously awaiting, being the person.
Sorry. Go ahead, Lance. What do you think? What are we looking at? What are we looking at?
Yes. Well, there are several aspects that we need to take into account. This is a very large consortium.
Oh, yeah.
And the geographical reach is a concern, right? Because the cost of doing
concerted effort throughout the entire region is significant. And so we need to make sure that whatever course of action we take is commensurate with the needs of our students. So yes, they do need to know more about our programs, but we also need to be judicious as to how do we approach that, because the dollars are so limited. Our first, that was the first part of the answer. The second part of the answer is that our first line of attack is what we already have in place, right? We know by experience and from surveys from our students that the way our students learn about our programs are from other students. So two things that we can do as far as that is concerned is to maintain our students as well informed as possible about all the programs that we offer. Because if they know, then they will tell somebody else about it. And one of the ways to do that is to make our website an exciting and interesting place where students feel comfortable going in and searching and finding new things. And so that's a process that is already in progress, and our good friend Justin Gorenz is right in the middle of it.
Yeah, actually, I think that's a great idea. The link should be connected to each one of our, our web pages, and then it goes directly to Larry. That would be great. So then they can see how we're all connected as one. I think that'd be a great idea.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, just echoing what everybody says, and just making sure. I mean, the key to a website is it's got to have stuff. It has to be updated every day, at sort of a minimum, right? So I think a lot of us have, and I've seen on our websites where there'll be these great student stories, right? Of course, right? And so, and really the point is, you're highlighting, of course, the student's accomplishments, but then you're also advertising whatever the program that the student went through. So if there's a way that, I'm sure you've talked about this, that Justin might be able to connect with a person at each of the districts to sort of, because the key is content, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just make up content, you got to get it from a source. So we've been able to kind of get a good pipeline going in LAUSD with our school sites, and so it'd be nice to get something set up similar with the other districts, so they can feed Justin information, because otherwise he'll be kind of trying to make it up.
Well, I'm so glad that you brought that up.
Yeah.
I think if I had asked you to bring it up, probably wouldn't have happened. But in actuality, we actually have already reached out through the Point Persons team to specific individuals at each one of the districts so that we can get content to update the website on a regular basis.
That's great. Landy, if I may, I'll talk to you after. I have somebody that I'd like to touch base with you on for that as well.
Absolutely. Thanks. Thank you.
Great. Any other comments? Okay, so don't go anywhere, Lancey, because the next one is you, regarding our adult ed quarterly report metrics.
Absolutely. And at the last open meeting, the board directed the Point Persons team to finalize the language for the reports. There were some minor changes that were suggested, and all I'm doing here is to let you know that that language has been finalized, and the report has been agreed upon in terms of the metrics and what's to be included in there, and that we expect the first report to be issued on August 15th of 2018.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Stark, can you share some great experience
with us?
Okay,
I'll keep it brief. This will be actually a part of my board member reports as well. Just two quick items. First, was invited to the Los Angeles Workforce Collaborative meeting last month. It was convened by the LA Chamber. It was essentially a reboot of a similar group that had been started right around kind of AB 86 period. Anybody remember AB 86? Well, I know many of us do. Sort of when the initial legislation from the state came forward in terms of this idea of consolidating adult ed into regional consortia, and really kind of a convening of the key partners who would be involved in that effort. So this is kind of like a reboot 2.0, if you will. And of course, there were representatives from workforce, community college, higher ed. Just you know, a lot of, you go to these meetings, everyone's talking about the same thing, right? How are we going to prepare our students for, you know, the demands of the current workforce? So really two takeaways I wanted to share in the context of LARIC. One is, I think as we're planning our next regional three-year cycle, we should really put employer engagement as a key piece. And I'm not sure how we measure that or what activities we want to put behind it, but I know each of us, each district, and even within our districts, we have different groups that are always sort of reaching out to various employers. And I think it would be good as a consortium to kind of have more of a coordinated approach, particularly around some of the key pathway efforts that are happening, as Adrienne Ann mentioned earlier, around articulation. Of course, completions are important. We recognize that. But even more important is placement into employment. And so that's really the ultimate goal for our students. And so the more we can engage our employer partners, you know, in that area, I think the better. So just kind of calling that out as maybe a key piece we'd want to make sure and really put some planning and effort around in our next three-year cycle. The other is, and we've mentioned this before, and it's kind of one of those, well, duh, but it's always worth mentioning, integration with existing plans, right? So as an example, LAUSD Adult Ed has our strategic plan, but the plan is nested within several other plans, right? So LARIC being one, but then we have a division of instruction plan. We have an LAUSD strategic plan, a big K-12, you know, we have the LARIC plan, we have our WIOA plan, right? We have our, you know, and so on and so forth. So just looking at it in terms of plans that are nested and integrated within existing plans, and of course with the community college and the Strong Workforce Initiative, you know, just kind of making sure that we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. And in fact, what we're doing is really already connecting with some of those broader workforce efforts. So those are the two takeaways from that group. And so I wanted to share that. And then there was one other thing I was going to share. Oh, yes. Last thing is just, I think it was the last meeting, I shared kind of what I think is, and this is coming from one of the recommendations from the Legislative Analyst's Office around adult education, is I believe an urgency around this consortium developing a sustainable and equitable funding formula moving forward. I'm going to keep bringing that up because I think until we land on that as a consortium, I don't think we're doing our jobs in the sense of doing what's right for students moving forward. We have a tremendous responsibility with over $120 million at stake that we're going to have to demonstrate to the state and other regional stakeholders in terms of how we're investing that money to solve the workforce issues in our region and really meeting students' needs. So we are accountable, and I just feel like until we have that formula in place, I feel it's a big area that, to me, needs immediate attention. So I would be in favor of, and I know it's not on the agenda, so Madam President, you know, will let me know if we can get away with this or not, but I'd like to sort of put a challenge out to each of the five districts to maybe have some dialogue, discussion about what that might look like and bring some proposals forward. Let's stop talking about it and saying, yeah, we need to get to that someday. And let's actually start putting some proposals on the table to present so that we're ahead of the curve and we're not waiting for the state to tell us how to do it, but we're actually leading the way, which I've said before is something we should be doing as the largest consortium. And maybe we get to sort of tell the state what how it should be done. But I just think, again, the way we're allocating funds is problematic on a number of levels, in my view, as I've been on record of saying before. So I would like us to, maybe by the next meeting, have some, at least at minimum, discussion, but I would say in an ideal case, some actual proposals to start looking at, again, timely as we start entering in our next three-year planning cycle. So that's all I have.
Thanks. So now we move on to actually board member reports, and that probably that would that be your board member
I'm
report?
Done. Thank you.
Dr. Miller?
The only thing I think I'll share with you today, earlier this morning, or this morning, Dean Mullen and I spent time with our nine college chief academic officers, or VPs of Academic Affairs, and also our nine college chief student services officers, also known as VPs of Student Services, along with our chancellor. And we spent considerable time talking about adult education and the manner in which we will allocate the funds, the ADBG funds that we have in our district, and the need to look at things not so much in silos, but to look at them horizontally across all of the dollars that we have to support adult education and CTE activities in our district. We're working towards not only developing regional plans across our district, but also encouraging our colleges to work hand in glove with the unified school districts that we support in our district in areas of adult education, dual enrollment, and other like functions. Our chancellor, Dr. Rodriguez, was quite direct in his requests, and I know that he is equally as direct in his discussions with our nine college presidents. There's a new community college funding formula on the horizon, community college system funding formula on the horizon, that will go into effect very likely July 1st. We will all know when the May revise comes out exactly what that means. There's been a great deal of conversation and advocacy relative to this topic. But it is going to change in a significant way how our system is funded. So whereas before we are tied primarily to seat time, in our case we call it FTS, full-time equivalent students, in the K-12 world they call it ADA, we are going from that to a form that it'll be somewhere in the area of 50% traditional seat time, FTS, 20% tied to what we might call an equity for underrepresented populations, populations that are challenged economically in other ways, and then 25% tied to completion, degrees, transfers, certificates, the attainment of certain key performance indicators, the attainment of momentum points and those types of things. And that last 50%, 25-25, might change in terms of percentage, but it's generally the concept that they're talking about. This new funding formula would go into effect July 1 of 2018, so immediately. There is talk about a two-year stability or transition funding to keep the 72 districts afloat while they figure out ways in which to measure themselves differently. The state is going from a quantity formula to a quality, if you will. The three-year completion rate in California community colleges is around 12%, not a very good number. The six-year completion rate is in the 42 to 47% range, also not a great number. So the legislature and the governor and others, and certainly our state chancellor, who's a very strong advocate for these things, is saying that things are going to change. So that's a big, big change for our system. It will have impact on us in many, many ways. It's necessary change to provide the level of services our students need so that they can find gainful employment. And I guess I would end by simply saying that the adult education part of this is very important, the pathway part of this is very important, and I can see even tighter alignment with our adult education programs as we go forward. So it's a long message, but I just wanted to get that out so everybody can hear it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Miller. Mr. Urios.
Thank you. So I agree absolutely with Mr. Stark, and I see it as regarding the distribution of ABG funds that we're due for a new evolutionary phase. I wouldn't necessarily say that what we're doing now is not working, but we're simply due for a new phase, given changes that have occurred. And I definitely want to be involved with that discussion, and that's going to factor in quite a few things, not only student performance data, but also staffing, admin costs, overhead, and things like that have to be taken into consideration. Regarding any sort of new distribution that occurs, so he's correct. We're due for a new phase on that. The other is regarding something also that is new and a lot of us are facing is this concept of IET, I'm going to be very vulnerable with you and tell you that. This is easier said than done. This takes a lot of thought, a lot of collaborative work to pull these things off. I understand what the outcomes need to be and what the rationale for it is, but it's one of those things where I think the state really needed to process this a little more and allow a little more time for the processing and evolution of these programs. So we are going to be launching a medical occupations IET program in August, and this is going to be team taught. Again, we're excited about this and the teachers collaborating and working together, but there will be some additional costs and impact as these programs are launched. And that's something that all of us need to be aware of, is that is going to be additional impact on budgets. The other one, which is a little more novel, and done some research, and there's, depending on which angle, there's not a whole lot out there, and that's information technology, IET information technology. And so, again, we have our teachers working together and collaborating on that, and we expect to launch that in August. Lastly, I would like to see, possibly, on our website, where all of our member catalogs can be placed on the LARIC website. That way, no matter where someone lives, they can look and see, and if one of our members has an outstanding program that's being offered, there should be nothing that prohibits that person from accessing that information and being able to go there. And I have to tell you, as an advocate of public transport, which I am, and how to get around in LA, and as our red line and our subway system is expanding, I think we're going to see less reason for folks to be prohibited from going, let's say, from West Valley to Burbank and taking a course at West Valley or another one at Burbank, as an example, with the impact and distribution of the subway system in LA.
Thank you. Mr. Garcia, anything?
I'm fine, nothing to report. Okay.
I just want to, one, thank LAUSD for hosting the EBRI training, which is for ABE teachers at evidence-based reading instruction, because it's so close, Culver City is able to participate. It's sponsored by CalPro, but offered at an LAUSD site. And then I'm excited to hear about the partnership between, CTE partnership between Venice and West LA, because we are less than a mile from West LA. And it just really speaks to the importance of our collaboration and serving our students from a regional perspective, because we are a small district, and so we can't do all those big things. We wouldn't have HISET. It would be very difficult for us to have HISET if it weren't for LAUSD. It'd be difficult for us to give our students CTE if it weren't for West LA and Venice. So I just want to re-emphasize the importance of regional collaboration in terms of serving all of our students in our region. So, and thank you for all of those partnerships. So that concludes our board reports. Now we're ready for action items.
Madam President, this is the board. Our presenter from Burbank has arrived.
Perfect.
Crystal Galan.
Perfect.
So if it's an appropriate moment, we can have her do her presentation.
Crystal?
Thank you.
Welcome.
So thank you very much for inviting me to speak about a wonderful new program that we started and launched actually this semester during the spring, and it's been wonderful. I've worked on this program, developing the program with Mr. Urieste and some of my other colleagues at the Burbank Dome School. This is a program that's catered towards, it's open to all students who are in adult education, but we're definitely catered the program for the ESL students. I myself am an ESL teacher, and I was hoping to be able to bridge not only to introduce English language concepts, but also increase digital literacy, while simultaneously supporting our students to be able to go out and find employment while they're currently taking ESL classes. So this is where the program developed. So we can go to the next slide, please. Thank you. So today we're actually going to talk about the program, how it developed, and some of the key components that I use in the program right now so that you can get an idea, maybe something that you might be able, if any of you are educators or running programs at your schools, might be interested in collaborating with your colleagues in developing, because I do really think it services our community. And this is a great program direction that we definitely should be going into for our students to maintain relevancy and competitiveness in a very changing, always evolving workforce. Next slide, please. So I'd like to ask you for a moment, and just to sort of maybe think for a moment, maybe turn to the person that's next to you, and in your opinion, I'd like you to consider just for a moment, what are the most important skills needed to succeed in the workforce of the future? So I know we probably have different folks in the room. I'm sure we have some educators. I'm sure we have folks that are principals or a part of the school district. But if you want to just take a moment to talk to the nearest person, and then we'll kind of collaborate, because this is where today's presentation is leading us.
So I think so communicate, communication, collaboration, creativity, and critical thinking and problem solving. Like those, because the technical skills, those are the things you learn kind of in the specific training places. But the ones that we can, and most employers can get to, but it's those other skills that
you read you know, kind of articles on some of those successful companies, you know, the Googles, and they keep saying it's all about teamwork. So it's really, it's not so much coming into it with, oh, I'm the expert in
right.
this. It's can you bring what you bring, and can, do you have sort of the people skills, teamwork skills to kind of get in a group and solve a problem as a group, right? And so that's kind of what we're hearing in terms of a real valuable skills that surprisingly a lot of people don't have. Soft skills.
And it's funny because, yeah, that's the old term, right? Soft skills. But as you think about it more and more, it's like
employability.
Yeah, they're not soft. Soft implies you can come and take them. You can take them or leave them. But these are like, and even like
so we're going to come together now as a whole group. And I scan the room a little bit, and I'm definitely hearing a lot of things such as technical skills. I'm hearing technology skills. I'm also here listening to literacy skills, reading and writing. Also, how to navigate just different online platforms to be able to find information. So these are all things that when my colleagues and I sat down in the room, these are things that we were considering. What is it? What are the most important skills that we need to equip our students with? Next slide, please. So this led to the creation of the Workforce Readiness Institute at the Burbank Adult School and the use of technology school tools and educational content. Next slide, please. So just like you guys did in a very short minute, we spent a lot of time developing this program and discussing ways to prepare our students for the workforce.
and help them find their ideal job in addition to moving up within their current position. We wanted to equip the job seekers with tools for success by teaching English and digital literacy skills simultaneously. Because now in this day and age, digital literacy skills are just as important now as literacy skills. And this is something that we are really building in adult education, because we're seeing this in K-12. We're seeing that that students now are working for the most part on computers and digital devices, cell phones, iPads, all sorts of great devices. So we want to make sure that we're also moving forward with our adult students, because many of them are also parents. And this also not only helps them, but also navigate their child's education too, and be able to connect more. Students also learn how to conduct online job searches, market their skills across various platforms, prepare for interviews, create websites, which we actually started this class, and just a way to set themselves apart. Because one of the things that I'm really learning as I develop this course is having a cover letter and resume is not the only thing you need anymore. You really need to figure out ways to set yourself apart. I envision probably in the next 10, 15 years that maybe you won't even have a resume and cover letter, and you'll have a website to sort of promote yourself, or some sort of digital platform, which seems to be the direction that we're going in. So we wanted to start exposing our students, and we'll talk about this. I know some people are, well, we have students that have never used computers before. So a lot of that has to do with ESL instruction, use scaffold instruction, you do the same thing with technology. So we'll look at some of those tools. Next slide, please. So what we're going to look at is, what does the program curriculum look like, the digital platforms that chose to incorporate in the curriculum, and some of the standards that we addressed as well. Thank you. So we have a dual program curriculum. We have a paper-based curriculum that's great. It's used mostly in the context of homework, reading, research. This is a great curriculum from WorkWise. They also have tons of links for students to go on, and we use those links for job searches, and we use those links for them to research the industry. This is a great curriculum in terms of a core curriculum that students have something tangible that they can engage with at home, at work, on their lunch break. And then the other part, which is what we do in class, is we're completely online. All of our work is online. We use computers from the beginning of class until the end of class. Next slide, please. So in terms of digital platforms, we decided that because so many students have Gmail accounts, and because Gmail is really an incredible platform to collaborate and create on, we had all of our students, some of them had never had an email before, create a Gmail account. And we were going to access Google Docs, Google Presentations, Google Slides, Google Forms. They just took their final exam on Google Forms. And we were going to have them create a Google site, which is the end project, which is a website. Next slide, please. In terms of developing different skills, a lot of the resources I search for are free, and they're really great resources. So some of my students really had never been on a computer before. So I had them working on websites like Typing Club, so they could increase their skills of typing. A lot of our English language learners, were hesitant and are trying to feel more comfortable with speaking, and I wanted to give them an opportunity to practice interview questions. So I used this great platform called Recapit, where I could submit a question, and students in the privacy of their homes and their car and their cell phones could record themselves answering the question and submit it for feedback. Mm-hmm. So this allowed them to be able to, you know, not only engage in the classroom, but if they wanted to have some more time to privately develop their responses, this was a great platform. I'd like to say that all of the platforms I chose could be accessed from their cell phone. This is a very important component, because not all of our students actually have access to laptop devices. So all of these programs can be accessed and used from your cell phone. The next slide that's really important is collaboration and engagement, which is obviously things that we have to do in the workforce. So we have them collaborating on Padlet, and we're discussing ideas around, what is the ideal candidate, how do we conduct a job search, and everybody created these really cool storyboards, essentially, with pictures and images and information that everybody could collectively see. We engage in a lot of our with vocabulary and understanding of certain concepts. We would play Kahoot, for example, which is always really fun no matter what age you are. I love to play Kahoot. And the students really enjoy that. But it has us interacting and collaborating with one another, which was really great for the English language learners in the class because they got to collaborate with native speakers. And then finally, when we talk about job searching using mobile technology, it was really important to me that I got them on sites like LinkedIn and Indeed.com, again, so they'd be able to access the information from their cell phone. That was really important to me. Because it's so competitive, you need to be able to apply instantaneously, so the sites that they were working on had to be easy access from their mobile devices. Then finally, some of the standards we addressed, we were really able to address, you know, the ELP standards and the CCR anchor standards, mostly around technology, oral and written exchanges, preparing effectively for a range of conversations. So this was really important that whatever we developed, we're supporting our standards. And finally, you know, our last slide kind of is some information if you guys want to talk to me. I'm happy to engage with you guys if you're looking to develop something like this for your school. There's a QR code link that you guys can photograph with a link to actually a larger presentation that was presented at the LARIC conference that contains some research and findings in terms of just technology and access to technology amongst our adult population. So there's some information including my website for you guys to have. So thank you very much. I can open the floor to any questions, or you guys can email me. I have some business cards, whatever you'd like. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I just want to say that what's exciting about what you just shared is that often we think that lower level ESL or maybe they're not ready for this stuff, they're not ready, but the reality is integrating it from the very beginning is what's going to make all the difference in terms of workforce readiness. So thank you.
Thank you.
This is really outstanding. Congratulations to you, Ms. Caban, on this awesome presentation. It's really fabulous. Two quick comments. First is, I think it's becoming clear that you mentioned a really important concept, funds of knowledge, which of course we apply with our students, but I think in terms of our consortium, it's becoming really clear we have some absolutely incredible talent in this consortium. We need to find a way to archive, warehouse, and access all of these resources so that, you know, at some point we could sweet talk Mr. Odiosity and getting you to LAUSD, maybe present, you know, something like this. We would
just for presenting.
We would have a mechanism to do that, which would be wonderful. And there was one other comment I was going to make, and I forgot. I was just blown away by the presentation. Oh, quick thing. So maybe, I don't know if this is a question for you or Mr. Odiosity, but talk a little bit about the PD, because I know that we all kind of struggle sometimes with instructors who may be a little, you know, maybe a little set in their ways and maybe not as comfortable with implementing and using technology, but we know from an equity and access standpoint it's essential because we need to give our students the tools to succeed. So I don't know if you wanted to say a few comments on how you've addressed the PD element with this, and really so the your whole teaching staff is embracing it, even those that might be maybe lower on the curve of technology.
So you want me to talk about that, of course. Okay. So I'm the guy with the black hat here. So I will tell you, and he didn't place me there. I placed myself there by rolling out that technology. Is one of the things is that I was very upfront with the staff, and I shared this anecdote with them. If I wear glasses, obviously, and if I needed eye surgery, and I go to an eye doctor, and he talks to me about radiokeratotomy, I know that he is not up to date on his know-how, and that's not the person I want him to do surgery for me. I want the person that has the latest procedures, most up to date, most informed, state of the art. And what I shared with our staff is, our teachers can be no different. And it will not work to to have students go through ESL, and in our case, levels literacy through six, never to touch a computer, never to access technology, only to be frustrated when they go then and seek a job somewhere and are pointed to a corner where there are a series of towers and they must fill out their application on that computer with no assistance. And I said, that would be an embarrassment to me personally, and I would not want, as the director of the program, to not give our students that competitive edge to be ready to access the jobs out there. So, PD, as Mr. Stark said, is something that we invested heavy in. And what we did was we brought folks in on Saturday. The staff wanted us to close school on Wednesday, and I said, I'm not going to close school on Wednesday. I'm not going to reduce instructional time. You're going to get paid, you come on Saturday. So they came on Saturday, and we brought people in. The other thing that we did is it wasn't just talk. We had every teacher with a laptop in front of them. Now, what I will tell you is, it was challenging. It was a learning curve for me. I made a huge mistake. And I shared this with our teacher leaders. My assumption was that everyone knew how to operate the technology. And I was very wrong. Some could barely turn the laptop on. So we had to go from scratch and show them how to utilize that. We also provided each teacher with a flash drive. Some had never seen a flash drive before. They didn't know how to insert it. They didn't know how to save anything onto the flash drive. So we really had to, I had to stop. I had to go into prayer, seriously. Seriously. And realize that this is the reality I have, and that my concept of reality was completely wrong. And I said, take a deep breath, and let's start from scratch. So we did that. And what I said is, we're going to walk you through this. We're going to walk you through this. We're going to provide you with every opportunity. By the way, it wasn't just one Saturday. It was a number of Saturdays that we did this. Where we brought out the laptops, and here we go. And we also allowed people to work together on things. So it was a lot of time that we had to invest. We did have a couple of people that, after all was said and done, said, I cannot do this and I'm going to retire. And I said, I'm very sorry to hear that, but you'll have to do what you have to do. Part of this was also that we said we must provide every student with an opportunity to access technology, so we bought flash drives for all the students. And we said every student must create a project. If we're providing the teachers with training, then the students have to have something to demonstrate that they are able to utilize that technology. So every student from literacy through level 6 had to produce a PowerPoint. And there were different themes that the teachers worked on. So this is where this initiated from. And it was through my realization, the epiphany that I had, and it was painful, that our staff was not able to provide the technological instruction to our ESL students because they weren't comfortable with it. And so what do people do when they're not comfortable with something? They avoid it. From there, I then started hearing about IET, and I brought teachers together. Now, Ms. Caban is legitimately a star. And yes, I would love, you and I have known each other for years now. if you need her and want to reach out to her, you're welcome to do that. The other is that it is really creating that effective co-teaching team. So we had meetings, and we had to strategize and think, who would be good to pair Crystal up with if we were going to team teach? Are we going to do this only on a Saturday and provide this workforce readiness? Do we want to create more access? Do we provide it during the week? And so we brought in two teachers, and the decision was made to run this on a Saturday for those that work during the week and want to change careers, want to promote, want to enter the workforce, whatever the reason may be, along with those that attend classes Monday through Thursday, that would be prohibited. So we had the Saturday. And then conversely, we had and said we need to offer this during the week in the evening for people that work during the day, and where Saturday's not a possibility because that's their day off and they may have children and other family activities, and so we have another teaching we brought in to offer this during the evening. A part of this was also, what about the students that are enrolled in ESL? We didn't want to prohibit them from taking this. So we said, if you're an ESL, let's say, for example, level 4, then you'll go to this workforce readiness from 6:15 to 7:45, and then you'll go to your ESL class that same night, which runs till 9. And we had to then have that broader conversation with our ESL teachers about, we're not going to penalize students at all because they're not late. They're in a class. They're going to go from this class to another. So it's actually, it created another element, which is new for many in this new era of adult education, which is flexibility. And we needed to promote that flexibility. I will tell you, I'm not a know-it-all at all. I try to be very humble, and we made a lot of mistakes with this. We learned from those mistakes. We're going to make it better the next time that we run this. But Ms. Gabon and Ms. Noss, who is the other teacher that run this, have done a phenomenal job. They have been very, very creative. And we've also used community resources. And that was my contribution to the program, was helping them with community resources and bringing in community partners as guest speakers. Because it's like my mother said, if I tell you something, you don't believe me. The neighbor tells you something, it's the truth.
Isn't that the truth?
So when we tell students something, yeah. I said, professor, okay, yeah, sure. But you get a community business partner that comes in and tells them that there's legitimacy, there's relevance, this is real. So that's what another element of this that we tried to do, and we brought in very key community partners. So you're probably regretting you asked me that question because I went on for quite a bit.
No,
but that's the best answer I had for that.
No, I love it. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So now we are on to our action items. Our first one is action item 6.1, schedule of payments for redistribution of Montebello return funds. Are you doing that? Because Carrie's, or
yes,
Dan doing that?
Go ahead. That's fine. And yes, that's a very fancy name for actually acknowledging Montebello's request to move the due date on some of the payments that had already been presented at previous meetings. Instead of the first payment that was originally due on June 30th, Montebello Unified requested for it to be due on July 31st. And basically, that's the request, and it's submitted to the board for action if approved, for discussion, and then action if approved.
So the action item is to approve the amendment number 1 to extend the term from July 1st. From July 1st, 2018 to July 31st, 2018, of just the redistribution of ongoing funding.
That is correct. Only the amount due on 17-18, which was the amount is 1.269.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
There?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Discussion?
Yes. Discussion?
Right. You.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Do we have a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to approve and implement the requested Montebello USD amendment for the redistribution of ongoing funds school year 17-18 from effective by June 30th, 2018 to effective by July 31st, 2018.
Second.
Discussion?
Okay, with that, I would like to just update the board on where we're at in regards to clarifying the payment back from Montebello Unified back to the consortium. The first amount of little over $5 million was just, our board just approved it as of last 2 weeks ago. And so at this point, it's already in process with our actual school district and with the county having to cut a check back to LARIC. So that first distribution is in the works, and it should be on date of June 30th in regards to the first MOU. I'd like to thank the board in regards to giving us an extension for July 31st for the second portion of the 1.26 and change. And in regards to that, that was basically not us not having the money. It was just a cash flow obstacle for Montebello Unified, and I'd like to thank the board for that as well. My fiscal advisors, my superintendent, have already signed off on all that. So it matters, in fact, it just has to go to our next board, which will probably be 2 weeks from now. My board has been informed that the 1.26 is also going to be in the second MOU, so they've been notified as well. So everything is in motion.
Yeah, and just for the public record, just to clarify, Mr. Garcia mentioned the checks to be cut to LARIC. The checks will be cut to the individual school districts. Correct?
Nancy, I'm sorry, if you could go over the MOU. I'm sorry. If I'm incorrect, I apologize, but either way, it's coming back.
Well, again, for the public record, I just want to make sure LARIC itself is not an entity to which monies can be distributed. So however we distribute the funds, it has to go.
Yeah, the fiscal agent's LA, correct? And then it's going to go.
Absolutely. So the fiscal agent representing LARIC for the transaction is LAUSD.
Right.
And LAUSD will redistribute to the member districts.
Okay, so just want the public record to make sure we understand
it. So, Bob, do we need to restate the motion just because there was discussion?
No.
But
no.
Okay.
I think we're ready for a vote now.
Thank God for Bob.
Yeah, well.
Right. So I want to call for a vote, Bob. LA Community College District?
Aye.
Burbank Unified School District?
Aye.
Aye.
LA Unified? Montebello?
Trust
me. Aye. Unanimous, motion carried. Did I say it right?
Perfect.
Well, I did that earlier. You missed it all. I did it earlier. I did it right.
Yeah. We also have to give thanks to Laura as well.
And sometimes they're not.
Got it.
All right.
Great.
Thanks, Laura.
So our next action is item 6.2, the Consortia Fiscal Administration Declaration, or CFAD. Lance, you want to explain that? Or is there?
Yes. And if I can refer the board members to the handout packet, agenda item 6.2, I will say in general that the same allocation formula that we have used from the beginning up until now is what we used to develop these. The only difference is that in order to bring everything up to date, we have included the amount redistributed from Montebello Adult Ed to the rest of the districts. In addition to that, we also included the COLA amount, or the cost of living increase, that was approved, or that was presented in the governor's budget of 4.1. With those two increases to four of the members, decrease to one of the members, then the final amounts were calculated for the allocation for year 2018-19 for each member of the consortium. And the amounts are listed on the last page of the document, on the third page of the document. And they are, which is
2577525.
Would you like me to read them individually?
Bob, no. Bob says no. Sorry.
No. Yes, so we have all the amounts included in the handout, which will be part of the record of the meetings. With this, and we don't have a form per se, because these amounts actually get entered into a system from the state where it's recorded how much each district is going to receive from the consortium, and each district will then go in and verify or certify that that is the correct amount. Once all five districts certified, then LEREC will be certified as well.
So do we have a motion, or was this part of a different...
Yes, we do have an action item, and that's included on the screen right now.
How is
so the action item is approve and implement the point person's team proposed CFAD reflecting the LEREC funding allocation for school year 18-19, including 4.1% COLA allocation. Reallocated MUSD funding and the LEREC office funding.
Do I have a motion? Do I need a motion?
You need a motion, but I don't want to make a motion.
Oh. I can't make a motion either.
Dan will do it.
I move to approve.
Do I have a second? Discussion? Thank you.
So I have to apologize because I was a little bit late to our closed session and missed the discussion in there, so I'm going to have to ask this question publicly. So we know that Montebello has some challenges, and I just need to know if my colleagues have vetted the 18-19 Montebello request on the basis of the size and scope of their program, and if my colleagues are comfortable with that. So, hearing no response, it makes me wonder whether or not we're in a position today to approve 18-19 funding for Montebello, given the circumstances that they are under, without some further. And also, hearkening back to my colleague Mr. Rosati's. Excuse me.
Curiosity.
Thank you for bastardizing me in there. Don't put that in the minute, by the way. You're sorry. That's the trouble you have made, like Miller. It's easy for everybody. In terms of us discussing funding formulas in general, I guess I'm a little uncomfortable. It's a pleasure of this body to vote for this for all entities. I will go along, but I will indicate that I do believe that we need further review, I guess.
Yeah, I'd like to bring this up because I think this is really important, obviously, and reflects maybe perhaps a fundamental misunderstanding on what the action item is before the board today.
Right.
So my understanding is that in terms of the reallocation amounts, for this year, next year, and their one-time funding as well, that was already decided by this board.
Right.
Correct me if I'm not, in January.
Correct.
So,
and these numbers.
So I guess I'm confused at this point in terms of what then we're actually voting on or being asked to vote on.
I guess I intend to then. I agree.
Thank you. And basically, this is a procedural requirement from the state of California so that the amount that has been allocated to LEREC can be further allocated to each one of its districts. This allows the state to start the process of funding or actually implementing funding actions so that there is no delay in funding. There's a due date for May 2nd. If I understand correctly, Dr. Miller's question, I believe that probably refers to what was being discussed earlier in terms of, you know, the allocation formula.
Well, let me see if I can make it very clear. I guess I'm uncomfortable in approving. As a fiduciary of LEREC and Larrick as being a fiduciary to the state of California for some $122 million, by approving this allocation, we as Larrick and I as a board member are have full faith and confidence that the numbers that are presented and the number of people that we support with these funds is accurate. We know from the experience that Montebello has had and is undergoing right now that there is an issue with the numbers of students that were provided, that were supported, and therefore the amount of money that they were getting. So now, unless I'm misunderstanding the action, we're being asked to approve 11.75% or Larrick funds, 10.21% of our 18-19 Larrick funds,
yes,
being provided to Montebello. And I guess I need to know that we've done some level of vetting and understanding that, in fact, Montebello is going to be able to do this. Because I think, and maybe I'm wrong, I think the state is giving the money to us, and we're giving the money to all five of us. Is that right?
That is correct.
So we're certifying, if you will, that the size and scope of Montebello's program is 10.21% of our $122 million allocation, and that they should be getting $12.5 million worth of funding from Larrick.
De facto, we're not really doing that. We have already done that.
Exactly.
When we approved the plan that Montebello submitted to us in terms of how to redistribute their funding, because the amount that is reflected in here, but for the COLA, is the same amount that the board approved as...
Well, then let me... Did we know what we were approving? Did we validate that? Did we do any of the needed homework in order to validate it? Now, the answer is yes. If we are comfortable that we've done that and everything is what it should be, then I'll put the microphone down and be quiet. I just need to have a sense of whether or not this is what we did or didn't do.
Right. The numbers were not evaluated. For my recollection, at the meeting, the proposal that was submitted by Montebello was accepted without question. So, no, we have not evaluated the fairness and approach on how the numbers were arrived at.
Yeah, I'd like to make just a few comments, because I do share Dr. Miller's concern in the long term. I think that the action that was taken at the January board meeting was taken with a number of considerations in mind. I know, speaking from LAUSD, size and scope of our programs, looking at budget development for next year, we were under the gun to make a decision. March 15th letters going out, right? We were all familiar with those deadlines. My understanding is what Montebello proposed was, at least from my understanding, a first step in the right direction. But I'm going to say again on the record, and I need to keep bringing this up, that this is not a long-term or sustainable way of allocating funding, given our responsibilities. And I think some of the questions that we all know are sort of out there, not to put Dan on the spot, but certainly there are some questions that I believe, as Dr. Miller is suggesting, perhaps haven't been adequately addressed. We know we're taking steps toward greater accountability in that area, particularly around fiscal reporting and so forth. But I guess from my point of view, if I'm understanding it correctly, the action item before us is an operational piece to an item that's already been voted on and approved by the board. Now, if that's the case, I would like to support my colleague, Dr. Miller, and maybe being very explicit about this, that I think this area of a funding formula, particularly vis-a-vis not just Montebello, but all the districts, but with consideration, obviously, in terms of the issues of Montebello, we do need to re-examine our practices around allocating funding to the districts. And I was happy to hear Dr. Miller's report earlier in terms of how the state is really looking at a funding formula for the community college. We may want to look at that as perhaps something that we would use for the consortium. But I guess I want to go on record as saying I don't believe, and I'm going to keep saying, that we're done as a board in terms of finalizing any kind of a sustainable, equitable funding formula yet. I think that work remains. And so I just wanted to go on record as stating that.
Just want to add that at that meeting, one of the things that I was very adamant and maybe a little too passionate about was the idea that the funding formula not be something that continued. And I was concerned, I was very concerned at that meeting that we were deciding on 18-19 funding. And I kept saying, why are we deciding on 18-19 funding? But because of the situation that we were all in, that was the decision. So I agree with you completely, Mr. Stark, that we need to come back and revisit, and it can definitely be something that we add to the agenda for discussion. But it was a hefty part of our discussion the last time that we actually, and then we ultimately did agree to that. So
with that being said, yes, we did agree. So with that being said, we need to come up with a timeline so we look at a new funding formula, because if it's going to affect, I'm saying Montebello, it's going to affect Montebello, we need to know in advance, because of the fact that we're looking at March 15th, way before January, obviously, because, I mean, if it's coming after just, I'm saying, one school district, then that's something that we're going to have to evaluate. And there's going to have to be specs that we need to all follow, and documentation and data from all districts. That's why I believe there's another auditor that we're looking to audit all of us, not just Montebello, all of us and all of our numbers and all of our students has to be looked at. And it's not based on enrollment. We've always said that, but it's based on outcomes, our actual demographics. We've talked about that as well. So there is other factors that we need to look at. And I understand what we're talking about here, but we've already voted on this. March 15th is come and gone, like Mr. Stark has said already. So this needs to move forward. And then from here, we have to come up with a plan on which way we're going on how we're going to start allocating. And I agree with Mr. Stark. I understand that. But that's the heavy discussions that need to start, like, now. Absolutely now. Because of the fact, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Because of the fact that this is going to also affect classroom closures, if possible, and or employees. And that is what it is.
I think just from my recollection, when we had the discussion in January, what you guys brought up while I was being very passionate was the awareness that the 18-19 school year would have had to be figured out in terms of formula way earlier than the time at which we were making these decisions. So,
yeah, and to be clear, I mean, as Dr. Miller stated, we don't allocate based on the student formula. We don't. This board does not do that. And I think we need to move more in that direction. So I want to be very clear, kind of, I think, ultimately, where I think we should be headed in terms of looking at a student-based formula. Now, whether that's a combination of FTES or performance, as Dr. Miller suggested, maybe it's a phased-in approach of some kind, it absolutely has to be done, and it has to be done soon. And I would like to, I don't know if this is appropriate at this point, I put
agenda
as a consensus item maybe for the board to start talking about some real proposals that we can start, putting on the table and evaluating.
So
where are we right
now? So where are we right now?
We have a motion on the table. It's been discussed, so you've got to vote on it.
Okay. So I'm going to call a vote. Mm-hmm. Bob, LACCD, sorry, Dr. Miller.
On the basis of my overall concern about fiduciary responsibility, and knowing that for whatever reason, Montebello's situation was called into question by the state of California for a variety of reasons, I am going to abstain from this vote.
Mr. Urios.
Aye.
Mr. Stark?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Garcia? Aye. Aye. four and one abstention. And I don't know who's writing that down, but somebody's
right there.
Okay. Oh. The motion carries. Whew. I'm almost at the end. I think I got this agenda thing.
So, can I ask the board? We've had a lot of conversation about creating a timeline, evaluating specific proposals for a formula, so on and so forth, but no directive has been issued and or motion has been carried. So can I ask the board to...
You and I will create the agenda items for next time. So we'll work together to put that as an agenda item.
Here's what I'd like to see, if that's okay. I mean, I'm just putting this out there. I mean, I'd like to see, instead of tasking it with a collective group, I'd like to see each district come forward independently and present a proposal, at least one. If you want to present more than that, that's great. And let's have a presentation, and let's do it not in closed session, in open, you know, in an open session. Everybody can see what the proposals are, what the thinking is, and I'd like that to happen by the next board meeting.
No, that's number one, that's too fast. Number two, we've done that in the past. I've seen that in the past. And it was all over the place. So we have to come up with actually a criteria of what we're doing before we're going to just make a presentation. Because I might present something, you might present something totally different. So I want to see a criteria first before we make our proposals. That's what I want to see.
I would like to see us in an environment of a board workshop as opposed to a much more formal meeting like this. We can have the district, I'm not opposed to that, to the districts presenting their plan. It could be a PowerPoint, and then there could be lots of question and discussion. But in a workshop setting, you really do allow also for your community members to engage and ask questions as well in a less formal way than you would in a meeting such as this. As far as the time of that, I don't know that we could certainly do that end of April, in May, but it's something that possibly we could work on later in the summer.
And I would agree with my colleague, Mr. Garcia, that this is something we need to work on sooner than later. And certainly we were sort of up against it last January, and to be quite honest with you, I didn't completely grasp what the magnitude of our decision was. So I would agree that a workshop setting would be good. I would agree that those of us who can come up with some ideas, bring our ideas to that workshop. And that we do that, convene that maybe in the month of June, if get past graduations and, you know, all that kind of stuff, bring in a facilitator who can help us. I do want to have some input into who that facilitator is, or at least I think our board members would like to do that. Also, what I'd like to have at that workshop is a thorough understanding from a historical point of view of how we got this funding formula that we are using today. What was the basis of that? I see Ms. Muller not there. Did you want to say something?
I have a question. If this is going to be done in June, we moved the board meeting in June from the 15th due to a graduation of one of our member districts to the 22nd, which is at the end of the CASAS training period, which ends on Thursday, and I don't know what that means. Concerned that some of our bodies who may be at that.
Well, it doesn't have to be June. It could be July.
Right, I'm just bringing it up. So sure. Some of our bodies who would want, if it's truly a study session, to have the give and take an input, may not be here in June.
So it's a great summer project. Let's put it that way. And I do believe that it's something we really do need to do sooner than later. But again, I just want to emphasize that I think it would be important for us to have an understanding of how the current formula was derived. And then go from there. Or maybe it's not important.
No, it's important. I don't know if it's clear cut as where we're going.
Right.
Whatever we develop, it's probably going to have more of a
a foundational piece than maybe where we came from.
Right. And then the other thing I want to emphasize is the same thing the state of California is emphasizing for the community college system. Whatever we do needs to have a stability factor built into it. So that, you know, to overuse the term I use too much, no animals are harmed in the filming this motion picture. That if we adapt to whatever the new formula is, we do so in a stable manner, and that we continue to maintain the sanctity and the strength of our programs.
Thank you. My turn. So our next meeting is May 18th at 1:30 p.m.
Do we have a location?
Do we have a location? Yet
we
for
do
May
not have
18th.
A location yet.
Okay. Location to be determined. Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah,
to be
determined.
Okay. And then there was our next meeting after that was scheduled for June 15th. However, it conflicts with a graduation, as Dr. Mullen said, mine, as a matter of fact. And so that meeting was moved to June 7 days after the 15th. It's 22nd, June 22nd. So it says here.
Just to echo what Dr. Mullen said, the point persons team felt that given all of the closing activities for end of the year that every district is going through, plus the CASAS conference, thank you, we are requesting that meeting be eliminated and that we restart in July.
So you're proposing to eliminate the June meeting and just go to July?
Yes.
And then maybe we can look at having a board workshop on that exact thing before the July meeting.
Yes.
Okay. So do I have a motion to eliminate the June meeting?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passed. Carries. So before we adjourn, the LERIC Executive Board and staff express our sincerest condolences to Emilio Urioste and his family at the passing of his father, and we would like to adjourn the meeting in honor of Mr. Emilio Urioste, Sr.
Thank you. Thank you.
The meeting is adjourned. Thank you. This is called a script, but so I will keep notes on those little things.
All right.